Good morning, Res Kev. It's good to be with you again and those who are watching in with us today. I want to start with just a simple acknowledgement that self-preservation is perhaps one of the most primal of our instincts. Much of the wiring in our bodies is wired to serve this self-preservation purpose. And our bodies work on behalf of our survival almost without any conscious thought on our part. Let's take, for instance, if right now I was to go jump in the lake. Now, there are some who would really like for that to happen, for they have been wanting me to go jump in a lake for a long time. And let's say they got their wish. And I jumped into Lake Michigan, which as of this morning still has some ice floating around on the top of it. Currently, the water degrees is about, our temperature is about 36 degrees. And if I were to jump in, my very first bodily response would be an involuntary inhalation and then hyperventilation. Some like shallow chest breathing that would be associated with panic. Now, as long as my head was above water, that might be okay. And if I could survive that first minute without inhaling too much water, it's likely I could survive for 30 minutes. But here's what would happen during that time. It's something called vasoconstriction. This means the constricting of all my blood vessels to try to lessen the amount of blood flow that's near the surface of my skin in an effort to preserve any heat loss. Now, this is not terribly good news for my fingers and my toes, or ultimately my arms and my legs. Because as the blood flow decreases, they start to go numb, and soon I will be unable to use them at all. Now my conscious brain, it knows that my arms and legs are pretty essential for treading water, but my body's survival mechanism cares nothing about my lovely appendages that are so necessary for the integrity of my movement. All it knows is that without my heart and my brain, I can't live at all. So it works to preserve what it believes I need most for my survival. Life can have a very similar effect to us as me being thrown into the lake. Throw us in over our heads, and our primal self-preservation takes over. In this place, we often constrict and pull ourselves inward as a response to what we perceive as a threat. We start deciding what's core to our survival and what we can lose. And we often lose things that are important to the integrity of our movement. Can I invite us in the deep waters we're all having to travel through to just start with a few deep breaths this morning? Just and not the breath that's up here in your chest, the one that goes all the way into your stomach. Let me pray. God, this week, some have felt like they have been thrown in way over their heads. The AAPI community this week, who is dealing with the death of people from their community, the murder of people from their community. The recognition of the racism that is inflicted upon them on a daily basis. Communities of color are contending with a tsunami of white supremacy once again. Women who can feel like they're drowning in the misogyny of the attack. We confess that we're all spending a lot of time thinking about self-preservation. Some of us have felt ourselves pulling in and constricting this week. We confess it's hard to think about the world when we're trying to survive. God, this morning, may you remind us of the things that are important to the integrity of our movement. God, I know not all these words are for everybody, but some of them might be. So I pray now, even with the distance that's created by technology, that you would somehow chaperone the right words to the right bodies, that they might bear fruit 30, 60, and 100 times what I could ever ask for or imagine. May you be big, and may I be little, and may I contribute to the integrity of your movement. In Jesus' name, amen. In John chapter 11, the story is told that Jesus raised his friend Lazarus from the dead. And Lazarus wasn't just a little bit dead. Lazarus was 4 days dead. As you might imagine, this type of news traveled, and some couriers took this news of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead to the Pharisees. Now, you would think that would be quite delightful news, but the Pharisees weren't particularly fond of Jesus in the first place, and him doing such profound miracles, they knew he was only going to find more followers out of it. In chapter 5, the Pharisees have tried to kill him. In 8 and 10, they've tried to stone him. Why? Well, we can't say for sure because we don't have their testimony, so I don't want to just read in other people's issues, but there are some things we know that Jesus did that upset the existing power structures of which the Pharisees were a part. And anytime someone disrupts the powers that be or messes with systems of supremacy, it's going to upset the people who benefit from it. Jesus is definitely messing with the powers that be and their claims of supremacy. So let me just offer 3 ways in which this was happening that might have made them mad. See, the Pharisees kept power by declaring who ranked as righteous and who didn't. And their clear lines of who is in and who is out, well, that made them feel powerful. And these lines were being blurred by this rabbi Jesus who let the outside in. Their clear lines of who ranked and who didn't were being called into question by this rabbi Jesus who called the last on the list first. This was very threatening to their power. Second reason, constantly exposed their hypocrisy, often revealing to the public that there wasn't much truth behind the Pharisees' slogans. Like the Jesus fish on the car of the person who flips you off as they cut you off. Like the proclamation to love our enemies from a nation who bombs theirs. Like the sign on the church that says, come as you are and then won't embrace you as you are. Jesus proclaimed the Pharisees' virtue was a pretense. And because Pharisees were the conservatives of the day and held power by their proclamations of purity, well, that really perturbed them. They had built their whole power around the pretense that they were a particular type of righteous people. Like gaining followers because you told them you were rich, Jesus was exposing that they were spiritually bankrupt, which really threatened their power. Third reason, I think the Pharisees had it out for Jesus because, see, they were afraid they might lose the little bit of power that they had in the larger system. See, the Jewish people, they had been a conquered people for much of their history. In the case of the first century Jews, of which Jesus was a part, the oppressor was Rome. And throughout Jewish history, there had always been those who were committed to like revolution, who wanted to throw off the yoke of the oppressors who held them captive. But in the history of Israel, every single revolt had been followed by a backlash, leaving the nation of Israel worse off than before. The Jewish leaders, which included the Pharisees, they feared the consequences of a revolt against Rome. They feared the Romans. They feared that Jesus would cause an uprising and bring another backlash that would take from them the little bit of power and authority they had. So they sought to remove Jesus from the equation before he would cause them any problems. In Luke 11:45, it says some of those who had seen Jesus raise Lazarus from the dead went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. And then the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting of the Sanhedrin. What are we accomplishing? They asked. Here is this man. He's performing all these signs. If we let him go on like this, everybody is going to believe in him. Then the Romans, it says, will come and take away both our temple and our nation. Then one of them named Caiaphas, who was a high priest that year, he spoke up, you know nothing at all. You don't realize it's better for you that one man die for the people than the whole nation perish. Now I want to take a moment to recognize that the Pharisees are having an in over their heads moment where they feel like their life or their way of life is at risk, which means they're instinctively thinking about their own self-preservation. They're constricting inward. Let's have a meeting. Let's focus on our own survival. See, they know they're going to lose something. And so they're at a crossroads, a place where, unlike when you're thrown into the lake and your body gets to make a decision without you, they're actually going to get to decide what they want to lose. Now, what's on the table for them? Their power, their influence, their comfort, their safety, and the integrity of their movement. These things are often on the table at the crossroads of all of our lives: our power, our influence, our comfort, our safety, our integrity. The Pharisees began as a movement of Jewish people who were upset because the people of God were abandoning the purity of the covenant they had made with God, and they were being lax in their morality and in their obedience to the commandments of God. So the Pharisees started a movement, you see, a movement to stand apart from the masses by setting moral examples that would testify that they were uniquely committed to the commandments of God. Yet at this crossroads, they are considering murdering a man, which I'm pretty sure all of us know, and I know they knew, flew in the face of one of the top 10 commandments the people of God were told to keep. One of the commandments actually written in stone. The Pharisees have arrived at a crossroads where their power and their integrity are at odds, and they decide they're going to keep their power and lose the integrity of their movement, or keep the integrity of their movement and most likely lose their power. The Pharisees are at a crossroads where they are deciding what they are willing to lose: their power, their influence, their comfort, their safety, or their integrity of their movement. And they're deciding as a group that the integrity of their movement is what they're willing to lose. It says in verse 53, from that day, they plotted to take Jesus' life. Now, chapter 12, the chapter which our passage is in today, it begins 6 days before the Passover. Jesus is back at Lazarus's house, and news had gotten around, and a large crowd had found out that Jesus was there. And they came not only because of Jesus, but they wanted to see the dead guy who's now alive, whom he had raised from the dead. So the chief priests made plans to kill Lazarus as well. For an account of him, on account of Lazarus, many of the Jews were going over to Jesus and believing in him. Now, let's just take the Bible at its word here. Once you make a decision that it would be all right with you to lose a bit of your integrity, it becomes so much easier to keep losing your integrity. Okay, this is for somebody out there. Once you make a decision, it would be all right with you to lose a piece of your integrity. It becomes so much easier to lose your integrity. The next day, the crowd that had come to Jerusalem for the Passover festival heard that Jesus was coming, and the whole crowd now went out to meet him. So the Pharisees said to one another, "This is getting us nowhere. Look, the whole world is going off after him." And this brings us to today's passage. It says, now among those who went up to worship at the festival were some Greeks. They came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, and said to him, "Sir, we want to see Jesus." And Philip went to Andrew, and Andrew and Philip went and told Jesus. Jesus is so popular that even the Greeks want to meet him. Jesus now has both power and influence, which he could certainly use to increase his comfort and his safety. But he knows the integrity of his movement is going to require that he let all of these things go, which means Jesus is at a crossroads. And the question before Jesus is, unlike the Pharisees, will Jesus override his own instinct towards self-preservation for the sake of the integrity of his movement? A movement that from the beginning was defined by kenosis, which simply means a self-emptying for the sake of the love of the world, a giving up of supremacy to stand alongside people. Will he continue with this, not just in theory, but when he's in deep water? Because that's where theory is often not practiced. Jesus is in deep water where the integrity of his movement is now on the table, where primal self-preservation can often take over for any human. In this place that so often causes humans to constrict, to pull ourselves inward, Jesus declared that even if it means losing all of his worldly power and influence, his comfort and his safety, he will not let go of the integrity of this kenotic movement. He says, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly, I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it will remain a single grain. But if it dies, it's going to bear lots of fruit. Those who love their life will lose it, and those who hate their life in this world will keep it for eternity. Whoever serves me must follow me. Where I am, there my servant will be also. Whoever serves me, the Father will honor. Now my soul is troubled, Jesus said, because he's at a crossroads. And what should I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, he said, it is for this reason that I have been brought to this place. Father, glorify your name in my choice to lay down my life. Then a voice came from heaven. Oh yeah, I have glorified it, and I'm going to glorify it again. And the crowd standing there said, man, it's like thunder. And others said, this must be an angel that spoke. And Jesus said, oh, this voice is coming for your sake, not mine. I already know this. He said, but now is the judgment of this world. And now the ruler of this world will be driven out. And when I'm lifted up from the earth, I'll draw all people to myself. Now, John says this is to indicate the kind of death he was going to die. Jesus is publicly proclaiming that what the Pharisees most feared is going to happen is going to happen. There is actually going to be a confrontation with the powers that be. The rulers of this world, he says, will be driven out, and Jesus will be glorified. The language used here, although we don't hear it, but is Roman imperial language. There's going to be an insurrection, Jesus says. That's what he's saying. Jesus is going to overthrow the powers that be. But here's the twist. This is not going to be an armed insurrection. This is not going to be an insurrection that is about self-preservation or worldly power. Jesus is going to overthrow the whole system, including all the methods and mechanisms of worldly power, which means Jesus will be glorified, not by violent forces, but by keeping the integrity of a life-laying down movement. Jesus is going to overthrow the powers that be by laying down his life for love rather than taking up a sword to preserve his way of life. Jesus is making it clear in this passage that there's going to be a confrontation of powers. I happen to think we might be in it right now. In fact, he says, it is for this very reason that I'm arriving at this hour. But it will not be an armed insurrection that the Pharisees feared. Instead, the confrontation of worldly powers will come because Jesus is going to willingly enter into a place where all the most primal powers of human self-preservation are going to be provoked. His life is going to be on the line. And with every bit of God's power at his disposal, every bit of power to lash out and destroy someone else to save his own life, and with the crowds behind him and his popularity at an all-time high, Jesus is going to have to confront the powerful human predisposition to destroy someone else in order to save ourselves. Jesus is going to have to put the integrity of his movement of self-emptying love to the ultimate test of choosing the other over himself, of laying down his life so that others can have more of it. And Jesus proclaims his crossroad decision in our passage. He said, oh, I'm going to be like a grain of wheat that goes down into the ground and is buried. And I will go down remembering that that grain of wheat rises again. You know how this works, he says. This is a necessary part of the process. And not just for me, but for any of you who want to keep the integrity of my movement. Whoever serves me will have to follow me, he says to the crowd, a crowd who had first gathered around him because he raised a man who was 4 days dead. Follow me into a life that's not about self-preservation, not because it means you won't have to lay down your life, but because with me you have seen and heard that graves don't get the last word. This is why I wanted to anchor today's passage in the larger unfolding biblical narrative, because it begins with the raising of Lazarus. Jesus, who has lived in a body for 33 years at this point, is well aware of the primal human impulse of self-preservation. He's well aware that the prospect of any kind of death freaks a body out. And so Jesus raises Lazarus and he says, spread the word, as if he wants everybody to be convinced about the resurrection before he offers the invitation to lay down their life. Like Jesus is saying, remember, I got you, even if you're 4 days dead. Jesus knew, I actually know this too, that there is a much higher chance that we will follow Jesus in keeping the integrity of this self-emptying, life-laying down movement if we are absolutely convinced that all the deaths of this life, well, they don't get the last word. And I think it's important to remember that Jesus is not asking us to contend with laying down our lives like as a test of devotion or something. He's inviting us to enter into this process of confronting our tendency towards self-preservation so that when we get thrown in the deep end, when we feel like our lives are at risk, we can learn to override our tendencies towards our own self-preservation for the sake of more life for the whole world. Our passage today says, those who love their life will lose it. Now, I don't think Jesus is saying that God is going to take out the lives of those who love it, their life. I think Jesus is just being honest that if self-preservation is our primary motivator, we will ultimately end up compromising the integrity of our movement. We will lose the life of it. Maybe it won't happen in one fell swoop. But like the Pharisees, after we make that initial decision that our lives are more important than at least one man, then it's not difficult to say our lives are more important than two, and then so on and so on, which is why what I think has happened to white Christian evangelicalism. I think it started as a movement with some great convictions, but it has become so wrapped up in its own self-preservation. And because of this, I believe every time it's been at a critical crossroads, over and over, it has chosen to compromise the integrity of the movement of Jesus. One that said that all outsiders should be invited in. Those who have been considered last should be considered first. A movement that said, it doesn't matter what the church sign says, it matters how the church loves. A movement that said, let go of our power and confront the systems of oppression and supremacy. And having compromised their integrity once, and then maybe a second time, like with Lazarus, soon whole populations of people seemed a reasonable sacrifice in order to keep the comfort and power of white Christian evangelicalism. Too often, when the body of white Christian evangelicalism has been thrown into the deep end and found itself at a crossroads and had to make a choice between power, influence, comfort, safety, or the integrity of the movement, too often the movement has followed the choice of the Pharisees to align itself with power, to try to maintain its own influence, to keep our comfort, to do what's ever necessary for our own self-preservation. For this, we need to repent. And at this crossroads that the church is at right now, I believe if we want to restore the integrity of Jesus' self-emptying movements, we need to be like a grain of wheat, to lay down our power, to embrace our discomfort, to quit seeking only the safety of our own lives. And perhaps we failed to do this because we forgot about the promises of the resurrection, or we only talked about it in terms of a next life. So let's remember Lazarus, 4 days dead and walking around again in this life. Because when we lose our lives in this world, there are things that can be raised back in this world too. I'm not asking you to have a Pollyanna optimism about your circumstances. Life is hard. But I am testifying to the one who raises people who are 4 days dead. This passage calls us to consider what we value when we're at a crossroads. Because you see, we will all lose things in this life. Some things we won't have much of a say over, but oftentimes there is a crossroad where, unlike getting thrown in the lake, we actually get to decide what part of our lives we're willing to lose. Now, many of you know this story of mine, and there's no need to go into all the juicy details, but there was a time where I got to stand at a crossroads and consider what I was willing to lose. Was I willing to lose what I believe is the integrity of Jesus' movement, a movement that always stands with the most marginalized? If it meant that I got to keep my job, keep my credentials, keep my housing, keep my community, keep my career, keep my comfort? Or was I willing to lose my job, lose my credentials, lose my housing, lose my community, lose my career and my comfort? If it meant I got to keep my integrity to the movement to which I believe I'm called? It was not an easy decision. Crossroads where power and our own comfort and integrity all intersect never are easy. But I can tell you, having kept my integrity, I feel like I lost the right things. Now, to add some additional integrity with this crossroads call to lay down our lives, I think it's important to say this, that it is likely that almost no one under the sound of my voice will ever be called to lay down your actual life, as in to die for Jesus, literally. And this is important for us to hear, because that's not the only crossroad that we actually need to be looking for. Every single day of our lives, we are going to come to crossroads where we are presented with choices. Choices that include our power, our influence, our comfort, our safety, or the integrity of the movement of Jesus. And we need to start paying attention to these real life crossroads, often fleeting moments that actually matter in this movement of Jesus. Jokes about other ethnicities that we can't let go in one ear and out the other. Passing racist comments that are made by strangers that we simply cannot let stand. Someone without resources in distress that we don't walk by, invitations to self-emptying that we can no longer just skip over. Integrity means being undivided, to be structurally sound, to be consistent, to be whole, to be without any corruption. This means all of these crossroads matter. And we need to learn not to minimize them, because when you put all these moments together, they make up the integrity of our life. So will you let go of your power to stand with the powerless, not just on a cross, but in your next meeting? Will you let go of the influence you enjoy to stand in your convictions at the store? Will you embrace the discomfort of the necessary conversation or confrontation at your dinner table? Will you put your lives on the front lines of the protest, armed only with life laying down love for a neighbor, willing to risk your own safety to stand up for the rights of those who have never felt safe in this world? Now, let me repeat this. It's likely almost no one under the sound of my voice will ever be called to lay down our actual lives, as in to die for Jesus, literally. And this is important to hear, because our brains, well, we respond to these circumstances as if there's a real potential for loss of our lives, when all we're likely to lose is our power, our influence, and our comfort. This is important for us to understand, because our brains avoid certain things like they are certain death, when mostly these things we encounter are just certain discomfort. And so we'll all need to be smarter than our brains. We'll need to learn to chaperone our brains when they have a primal embodied self-preservation response, as if we were dying. We'll need to teach our bodies that loss of power, loss of influence, loss of comfort, loss of supremacy isn't going to kill us, but rather it has the potential, just like that little grain of wheat, to bring more life to all of us. And so before I close out in prayer this morning, I want to offer one crossroads technique, one that I've learned that is helpful when I have found myself standing at crossroads. Now, you'd have to know you're at a crossroads to use this technique. So like I said, first things first, you have to start paying attention to even when you're at that moment where power and integrity or comfort and integrity are coming at a crossroads. But if you recognize you're at a crossroad where there are these choices on the table of power, influence, comfort, safety, and your body is interpreting the situation as like dangerous, even though it's probably not, but it's saying, this is about your life. If your body thinks that, it's going to initiate what it believes is a life-saving response, which means you're going to fight, flight, run away, freeze, don't notice me, or you're going to fawn. That's what they added in. Love that one. It means you're going to bow down to the powers you think will preserve your life. And here at this moment, when your fight, flight, freeze, or fawn things are going on, here's where you can teach your body a different response. Because unless we teach it another way, we will never rise above our primal instincts of self-preservation. Now, I'm indebted to Rezma Menakem for his recent work in this area. He wrote a book called My Grandmother's Hands, which I highly recommend. And his teaching makes clear that when we're afraid for our survival, we will often find it difficult to hold our integrity. And the answer, he says, is not in telling ourselves we're safe. Because when our bodies are feeling unsafe and are launching their survival mode, they don't listen very well. The only language our body can hear when it's afraid is an embodied language. So in these crossroad moments, we need to be able to speak to our body through our body. And we've actually been doing this since we were babies. Like this, You know what that's about? It's called self-soothing. This is the way we learned when we were tiny to tell our body we were okay. But because it can look a little strange in the midst of a contentious conversation at a checkout counter to do such a thing, I want to offer a different way. When you recognize that you are at a crossroads where choosing integrity can feel like losing your life, I want to invite you into this practice. And if you want to, you can do it right now. But I would invite you first to just stand and to put your feet shoulder width apart. That's important, shoulder width apart, because it's important that you're able to feel the stability of your stance. To communicate to your body that you actually are not off balance. It's good if you push your heels down into the ground, because then you can feel that you're not being sucked down into the grave. You are actually not dying. And then I'll tell you, if you put your chin up like this, this tells your body that you're on a dignified mission. You're just being who you're called to be. That's it. And if you raise your chin, it helps you remember that. If you square your shoulders, this tells your body that you have the strength that you need for this. And if you lower your shoulders, you can help maintain the integrity of Jesus' mission by telling yourself, no need to be grabbing for a sword. And then if you take in some deep breaths from that heels in the earth, wide stance, shoulders down, chin up place. And not chest breaths. Don't move your chest. Chest breaths are fight or flight breaths. Breathe all the way down. Remind yourselves that you will not be bullied even by yourself. You can take as much time as you need. And now, just hold the gaze of the world. There's nothing the world can take from you that God cannot raise back to life. Dare them to take it. Now, from that place, you, the fullness of you, can stand at this crossroads ready, able to make a decision that rises above your primal thoughts of self-preservation, so that we together might hope to keep the integrity of the Jesus movement. We are at a crossroads, church. Let's not lose the integrity of the movement. Let's embrace a kenotic, self-emptying love that was meant to be there all along, that lets go of power, that is not motivated by our own sense of influence, that is not afraid of discomfort, and that will lay down its actual living in order to love the whole world. In Jesus' name, amen.